This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Did you know that Wisconsin wins more national and international cheese awards than any other state or country? Learn more about Wisconsin's cheese-making history at wisconsincheese.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're telling the stories behind iconic dishes. We learn what it will take to save New York's most famous egg cream, discover the importance of the goat neck in the East Village, and take a trip to India for delicious flatbreads.
Our customers who come in to get egg creams and t-shirts, they love to talk about their childhood or their teenage years or their college years.
I was living in Nepal, in northern India, and out there there's a real famous dish, a classic dish I should say, is called paya.
Parathe Wali Gali, or as it awkwardly translates in English, the lane of the stuffed flatbread makers, is probably one of the most popular food streets in Old Delhi.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one of your hosts, Darren Bresnitz. A few weeks back, we were supposed to head down to San Juan for the Dorado Beach Culinary Getaway at the Ritz-Carlton Reserve, but due to some plane mishaps, some travel mistakes, and just not being able to get there, we never quite made it to one of the best new food festivals in the world. That being said, that would not stop us from having a great conversation with Jose Enrique, who talks to us about the island, the current state of the San Juan food scene, and how, after Hurricane Maria, the island is stronger than ever. We also dig deep, deep, deep into the archives and have Brandon Cook, a.k.a. Star Child of the New Romantic, who plays a legendary set. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
Just pray, oh, to hear from you. welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. We have cook Jose Enrique on the line. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
How you doing?
Good. Thank you so much. I'm sorry for my flights getting delayed and not making it down to San Juan, but I saw the photos and I heard about the food and everything looked delicious.
Well, it's all good. We're here now and thanks for having me. Beautiful. You know what? I can honestly say this, that since we're talking about the pre-hurricane and after hurricane, I think before there was a you could see how things were just getting more developed as far as farming wise, right? Like people who were actually growing things and agriculture was just getting a little bit more organized, because I think that's a big word in this. Organization, I think, is actually the key. You can have somebody growing arugula and then the next guy's throwing arugula in there, the next guy's growing arugula, and then actually the farmers in the middle of the island getting all that produce down here, that becomes like an issue, you know? And I think when they start getting organized and like, oh, well, I'll pick everything up in the center and then I'll drive things down. When they start getting organized, I think it starts creating more of a buzz. Things just start generating a lot faster, you know? So mm-hmm. I think after the hurricane, I think it's come back with a vengeance. And I want to say, let's say you and I just figured out we're going to start planting tomatoes and microgreens or whatnot. And after the hurricane, everything kind of got torn down. But since we were doing kind of good, it's like, oh, we're going to rebuild now. We're just going to make it better. We're going to make it bigger. Since we already know all the errors we did at the beginning, you know how sometimes you want to start something and you start it off, oh, I should have put this here or that there. Now you already went through it. So it gave you a chance to start off even bigger and better. And I think that's what happened. After the hurricane, I think that's exactly what's going on right now.
What did the storms show with some of the sustainability issues of the island? I know that you had gone on the record before about being able to source materials. What did the storms really highlight about some of the problems that you as a chef or people who were just getting food for their homes were running into on a day-to-day basis?
You know what? I don't think so. I don't think it did that. I think for me, I mean, I knew what the problems are, you know, like we were always, the issues were always like, okay, I want 7 pounds of this. And it was hard to get, 7 pounds. And I was like, I only got 4. And you're going to get here Tuesday. And then you got here Thursday. So those are just, that's just what I was getting at before organization-wise, you know? What the hurricane did was just basically what I actually emphasized before. It's just everything came back with a vengeance, you know? Like everything's just more planned. Everybody's more focused on it, you know? I see, like, everybody's a little bit hungrier, you know? That's what I see.
So how are you organizing with farms in the rebuilding? What are some of the success stories? What are some of the struggles? How have you, now that you're reinvigorated and coming back with a vengeance, talk to me a little bit about working hand-in-hand with them.
So, I mean, what I do is I just order for them. You know, that's all I do. I order from them. And it's what I've been doing since I opened up the restaurant 12 years ago in La Placida, now I've moved to Condado. That's what I've consistently been doing. And I think that's, you can do more, obviously, you know, but I think that's what you need to do. It's just order. And all I do is order. And it was before I had a board, you know, like a just magic market board. And when you'd walk into the restaurant, I would write down what the special was. And when I ran out of it, I would just erase it, you know? So if they brought me 12 pounds of kale and I ran out of kale, it wasn't a big deal because I would just take it off the board, you know? Now I have a written menu and I need a little bit more consistency on their behalf. But I've also written the menu in a way where it's like, for instance, I'm reading off it right now. Sides, I have greens and it just says greens. And those are sautéed, and it's like, it can be anything. If they bring me bok choy, if they bring me kale, if they bring me green beans, if they bring me gandules, whatever, I can just sauté them, okay? Same with the fish of the day. The fish of the day is usually local. and it just says fish of the day because it's whatever they bring me. So I've ran the menu in a way where I have a little bit more leeway, you know, I have a little bit more space. Soup of the day, like everything is like of the day or the coach of the day. So then it's like whatever veggies I have or whatever fresh fish I have, I put on there. So all I do is, I mean, all I do is order for them and you know, just that's how I back them up, you know. And honestly, it's actually, I don't even feel good saying that because they're the ones helping me out. You know, they're the ones giving me all this great produce, which I just have to like barely salt and season and serve it because it's so beautiful that I don't want to ruin it, you know.
Of course. And what is the flip side of that conversation? Can you talk a little bit more about what the farmers are saying to you, how they've rebuilt? And, you know, I know that you ordering from them and putting their produce and what they harvest on the menu is one of the best things you can do. But what are they saying? How do they feel about rebuilding and working with chefs and people who are buying their food?
Honestly, I don't want to put words in their mouth, but if I had to say anything, I would be like, this is just life, you know? This is just how life is. Like, we've been dealing with hurricanes all our lives. You know, this one just happened to hit us right through the middle of us, and it was a big one, and it was just more serious than a lot of the other ones. But this is just life, man, you know? It's like, just like if you're in an area where you get a lot of tornadoes, you're going to have to deal with it, you know? It's just... You know what I'm saying? It's just part of life.
Yeah, I do.
You got to keep going. What are you going to do? You know? It's like there's an old
keep
saying
opening.
That's like, correct. If I'm walking and I stop walking, you push me along. If I actually kneel down and then I actually fall to the ground, then shoot me in the head. You know what I'm saying? It's harsh, but it's, you know what I'm saying? What are you going to do? You're going to lay down and cry? You got to keep going. That's it.
You have the farmers who you're working with and buying from, but then there's also people who work in the restaurant and the other people who are part of the hospitality business. How have they been able to come back? What have they added to people who are part of, you know, the tourism industry of giving back to San Juan, of rebuilding, you know, what was lost in Puerto Rico?
I don't know. Like, you come here, you work. If it's good, it's good. We just do what we believe in. I do what I believe in, you know? And I believe in just taking stress off people and giving people a good time and giving them a good ambience. And I believe in just, like, sit down and I got you. You know, I'm going to feed you. I'm going to have you a good time. And that's, you know, that's just what I do. You know, I'm not necessarily doing anything for anybody. It's just what I know how to do, whether or not there's a hurricane. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. It just feels weird to me say, am I rebuilding? I'm not rebuilding anything. I'm just doing what I need to do, you know?
Right. So, I mean, I guess then is the perception of rebuilding or the perception of that things were completely knocked down the wrong perception? Is it just, you know, life as usual there, or is it just this is a new challenge for you to face as a chef and as a business owner, and then just moving forward one day at a time?
Yeah, I mean, what else are you going to do, you know? It's just, I don't know, honestly, for me, it's like, I don't know, I just don't even think like that, you know? I'm like completely on the opposite side of thinking like that. I'm just like, we go, we get up, and we move, and we do what we love, and that's it. And that's enough. If I'm happy day to day with what I'm putting out, then that's enough. Because, you know, you want to help here, you want to help there, but you know what? If what you do, you love what you're doing, and you're happy about it, then that's enough for me, you know?
Of course.
And hopefully people around me and whoever come, they love what I do, you know? And if they not, I try to, you know, I try my best to make what I do the best I can, and that's it.
And how has the local dining public responded? Are people eating out? Are people focusing more on cooking local food, using local ingredients?
I think it's both.
Mm-hmm.
People are definitely eating out, and people are definitely, when they are not, they're focusing on local ingredients. You're completely right. They're doing both. People are like, people love going out in Puerto Rico anyways. You know, it's like we love going out no matter what, you know. It's like it's always, I mean, and I have to say, I think party is like, party is not the word, because party just seems like a party. You know, it's more than that. It's socializing. You know, it's actually, that's what it is. It's way more than partying. It's just going out and socializing and feeling the vibe and just and meeting your friends and meeting new people and just going out. You know, that's I think something we love doing, whether it's going to the beach or going to the mountains. It's just something we love doing. And as far as cooking, well, yeah, everything's grown. Everybody's looking more towards what's fresh, what's from here, what's grown in Puerto Rico. So even if you're in your home, you're looking more towards that. So it's both.
I mean, was there a time or a trend when looking outside of the ingredients offered on the island was more in fashion? And now it's shifted back to farmers markets. They're sourcing locally.
I don't know if it was a trend. I think it was more like that's what there was, you know. I mean, you have to think about what happens. If you're going to go into that, you got to think about what happened in Puerto Rico, the 50s, what happened, Jones Act, you got to get into all those things. But mainly, there was agriculture was just taken from here, you know, and there was no agriculture. So it wasn't a trend buying, oh, great, it's from States or from wherever. It was just like, well, that's more like, well, that's what there usually is. I think now you get to see people are just a lot more into agriculture. People are a lot more into, like, locally fished, which obviously there's not that much, but it grows every day. So, I mean, and it makes sense. What do you want to eat? You want to eat this tomato that was picked a day ago or 3 hours ago, or you want to pick this tomato that was picked a week ago and it's been in a container and now you have it in your supermarket? You know what I'm saying? Like, it just makes more sense, you know?
Yeah, I mean, do you find that as the local cuisine and ingredients and having that local tomato becomes more popular, becomes normal, that the overall dining scene will shift in Puerto Rico, that people are going to come down and want that local food experience and not just their Caribbean catch-all type of dining experience?
Well, I think Caribbean is a huge part of that local tomato, you know what I'm saying? Because we are in the Caribbean. I think it's really important. But I completely agree, and it becomes a part of I think it's what we want to give out, you know? So it's what we got to give, you know? Like, at times, when I opened up the original Sandique, when I opened that restaurant up, that menu was probably 85%. Imported everything, you know. I would have like a 15%, and that was like the plantains, the milk, obviously, some yams, some fruit, a little bit of fish. Maybe I would get guinea hen, and then with the years, it started going to like, oh, well, now it's down to a 70. Right now, it's like 50. I got to a point where some days I was like, 75% of my menu was local, and I was like, you know, I was like, I'm crying today, you know. And after the hurricane, well, that all changed, obviously, because, you know, things got torn up. But then I don't want to say, I don't want to be quoted on this. Like, I don't know if it was within a year and a half, but it just started just growing back rapidly. So right after the hurricane, everything was imported. And then it was quick. Like, the turnaround was maybe for people who were actually doing the farming, it wasn't quick. But for me, it was like within a year, I was up to another, like, 50% today, you know, and like it was good, you know, so it's definitely happening, you know.
Oh.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Wisconsin has storied cheese history that begins with Swiss, German, and Italian settlers in the 1800s and continues today with nonstop innovation and award-winning artisanship. Wisconsin was the first state to establish cheese grade standards and the first to require that every cheese plant be overseen by a licensed cheesemaker. It is the only place outside of Europe where one can pursue an elite master cheesemaker certification. All of this helps Wisconsin cheese win more national and international cheese awards than any other state or country. Take, for example, Decatur Swiss Cheese Co-op, who have made cheese since the 1940s. Steve Stettler is a Wisconsin master cheesemaker who developed several new cheeses for the co-op, including a European-style Havarti, a Swiss lace cheese called Stettler Swiss, and a Colby Swiss marbled cheese. His cheeses have won awards at the Wisconsin State Fair and the World Championship Cheese Contest. To learn more about Wisconsin's award-winning cheesemakers, visit wisconsincheese.com.
It's this confluence of, you know, a natural disaster and having to rebuild a lot of this infrastructure on your own, but then also mixed with this desire for food tourism to have a more authentic experience, plus, you know, celebrating your local cuisine that seems to have led to this new moment where the future is wide open for what you want to do.
Yeah. Yes, in a way. In another, it's what you want to do, but it's also like I said before, like, dude, like, you give me good ingredients and I'm here trying not to mess them up. You know what I'm saying? So of course I want to give everything local, but why? Because it makes sense, because it's grown here, because if it grows here, it means it's like, it's something I should be eating. It also means that it was recently picked or harvested. It means that the flavor is better. It means the ingredients better. It just makes everything taste better. And I have to do a little bit less work. Maybe it costs me more, but who cares? You know, my work is in actually finding the ingredient, not in having to make something taste good, which is, oh, that fruit is so unripe and it came from I don't know where. Oh, well, you got to cook it or put sugar. No, I can actually cut the fruit and put it on a plate. And that's all I do because it's so damn tasty, you know? So,
yeah.
That's what I love, you know?
Do you think that there is more opportunity? Because, you know, there's more pop-ups and there's more trailers and there's maybe like a little bit of a wiggle room of what you can be to be a restaurateur in Puerto Rico these days?
Yeah, and there's and the pop-ups and trailers and a lot more restaurants. There's restaurants opening up left and right, and I believe it's amazing. I think it's great, honestly.
What is the community like right now between chefs and businesses and is it a sense of togetherness? Is everyone helping each other?
I mean, you know how chefs are. Come on, they love each other. They fight each other. You know, it's like a soap opera half the time. Well, in Puerto Rico, like, you know, if I don't know you, you dated my cousin in high school. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know. It's so like San Juan, like everybody knows each other, you know, mm-hmm. Which is makes it even more soap opera, more like a soap opera. But I'm on the side where I'm extremely happy. You know, I think obviously it's like, well, what you just said, I think it applies to everybody. Like you can pick on your brother, but nobody can pick on him. You know, mm-hmm. You can pick on your cousin, but if somebody goes and picks on your cousin, you're not going to let them do it. You know? So, yeah. Of course, somebody picks on one of us, we're all going to unite. But I love the fact that there's restaurants and bars and things opening, you know. I think it's great. I think it's great for the culture. And, you know, what's done right is done right and it will prevail. And but at the end of the day, I want it all to work, you know. I want more places to go.
So with all the spotlight being put on San Juan and the rebuilding, and now that we're a few years out, there's a lot more journalism. There's a lot more tourism coming. You know, what do you hope, what stories do you hope that they focus on? Like, what do you want them to talk about when they come to the island and they spend their money and they eat and they hang out?
Well, that's a rough one. I mean, they're journalists, so what do you want? You know, you want the truth. Do you see what I'm saying?
I want the truth.
Like,
yeah, give me the truth.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what I'm telling you. Like, what do I want them to focus on? The truth. So yeah. It's like I would love them to say everything's amazing, but that's not even life. You know, so they're going to, hopefully they focus on the truth and they say the truth. And, you know, what would be great, what would I love them to focus on? The fact that, you know, if they could find out and look at places that are actually doing things where they care about using these local ingredients, which I think a lot of us are doing and are trying, you know. And another thing, which I've always thought is just very true, and sometimes times make this change, but it shouldn't. For instance, you want to eat pork? Go right down in the middle of the island. Go into the middle of the mountains and find an amazing pork. You know, you want to eat fried fish? Go right on the coast. You know, and it's a piece of cake. I mean, most times, like, the coast is like half an hour from the middle of the mountains. You know, Puerto Rico's tiny, but that I think is something really important. Sometimes you're in the coast and you want to eat, you go eat pork and it's not good. I'm like, well, you know what? Because you're not supposed to be eating pork in the middle of the beach. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I think that's changed. You're like, oh, why can't we have pork in the middle of the beach? Well, you know what? Because that's not what, in the middle of the beach, you actually, people who live there, they go fishing and they fry fish all their life. They haven't been killing hogs all their life, you know? You go to the middle of the, and I think that part of Puerto Rico, I think it's beautiful and it needs to be pushed on. Like when I was a kid, we'd go, oh, you want longaniza? We would go, you know, to a certain place to eat longaniza. All right. You want to eat pork? You go to Guadalupe pork. You want to go here? You go here to eat pork. And you want to eat fried fish? And you go here. And that's, especially being in such a small island, you can actually do it. You know, you can travel, see the island and actually go to a place and drive there just for their chuleta con carne. You know, just because they have a great pork chop. I think that's beautiful.
I love that. So I want to talk a little bit about the culinary getaway at Dorado Beach, which came back for its third year, even though it started about in 2015, because it took a few years off to rebuild. What do you think the importance of this event returning? And what did you want people, or what did you hope people took away from it when they came this year?
Honestly, I love it. I've been doing the event since the beginning. In the first year I did it, it was Jose Andres, obviously. And it was Anthony Bourdain and Eric Lepere and myself. And it was such an amazing event, mainly because, you know what? It really has a lot to do with the location. It has to do a lot with that rich reserve. It's so elegant, but at the same, it's so casual. You feel like you're, I think it expresses a lot about Puerto Rico, honestly. I think that getaway, that helps out a lot. It's like, it talks about Puerto Rico. Listen, we could be here in our flip-flops and our shorts and our t-shirt, but it's just like, elegant and casual, and I think that place exudes that. It expresses that, you know. And having all these chefs just giving, it's not just doing food. It's more than that, you know. We get to talk, you get to educate, you get to people come up to you and ask you things, and I think it exemplifies just that part of Puerto Rico where it's like it can be so nice and elegant, but so laid back at the same time, and I love that.
It taps into what you were talking about earlier about this idea of socializing and bringing people together and how it's not just partying, but it's a way of life.
Yes, correct.
Awesome.
Correct. So, it's exactly what it is.
Yeah. So as you look towards the future, what are you most excited about as far as the local food scene? What would you like to see happen in? How can other people help? How can people support Puerto Rico and the food it has to offer?
We're just, I don't know, we're one of many, you know, and we are all, like, amazing, you know. That's the world. It's just variety, and I think I love variety. I love variety. That's what it is. And we have something to offer just like any other part of the world, but we're in the Caribbean. It's hot. It's warm. It's beautiful, you know. I don't know. It's a fun time, just like you would love to fly to any other world. I mean, I've always said this, you know, the international airport. You can get on a trip from here straight to Madrid. You know, you're here in Madrid. You're in 8 hours. Manhattan, 3.5 hours, like straight flight. And at the same time, even though you've got this airport where you can take flights straight to Bogota, you can just also walk from the airport to the beach if you want. You know what I'm saying? Like, you also get that other Caribbean side to it. And I think that's beautiful. You know, you get kind of the best of both worlds in a way.
Amazing. Well, Chef, thank you so much for your time. Where can people find out about the restaurant or about what you're up to? Where are you on Instagram, things like that?
Yeah, just Jose Enrique. And Instagram is Jose Enrique PR, like Puerto Rico. That's it. We're here.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Chef. I really appreciate you taking time to talk with me.
Thank you. Thank you.
I hope to catch that next flight, and I will see you soon.
Yeah. Well, pleasure. I'll be down here for you.
Okay. All right, Chef. Have a good day.
All right. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Heritage Radio Network on Monday, November 11th for a raucous feast to toast a decade of food radio. Our 10th anniversary Bacchanal is a rare gathering of your favorite chefs, mixologists, storytellers, thought leaders, and culinary masterminds. We'll salute the inductees of the newly minted HRN Hall of Fame, who embody our mission to further equity, sustainability, and deliciousness. Explore the beautiful Palm House and Yellow Magnolia Cafe, taste and imbibe to your heart's content, and bid on once-in-a-lifetime experiences and tasty gifts for any budget at our silent auction. Tickets available now at heritageradionetwork.org/gala.
Oh, yeah. Eat them to save them.
Welcome back, Star Child. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Hey, guys.
How's it going?
Doing pretty good.
Love that shirt.
Yeah, man.
Thank you.
That is... That
classic
is,
Twin Shadow.
Shout out to George.
Shouts out to George. Poppy.
He's holding it down Ten of the Tree right now for his weekend, Twin Sunday. He does like a food, dance, party attendance out in L.A.
Really?
Yeah. It's really cool. Couple of dance-offs.
Mm-hmm.
He always looks... I always roll in on Sunday looking bedraggled. Fresh. Yeah. Always looks fresh.
He's always fresh.
Welcome to the show.
Hey.
Really good to have you here.
Nice to talk to brothers, man.
Twins.
Yeah. Are you a brother?
Twins. Yeah, I'm one of four.
Really?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. What were you guys playing in the house? What music was on the stereo growing up?
A lot of, like, Stevie Wonder, I think. A lot of, like, Stevie Wonder Genius Cycle type stuff. We went to like a pretty poppin' church called Union Temple in Southeast DC. Had a great music division, and so we got a lot of that and a lot of Michael Jackson.
Were you involved in the church music program?
No, I wasn't. My mother was growing up, but we got a lot of that, and then we also got like all the great 90s radio stuff. Like I was a huge DMX fan, like Jay-Z, early Rockefeller, Bad Boys, Nelly, and then we moved to Atlanta. And we went to the middle school and high school that like Usher and Sierra and all these kids went to. So that was like, that's where we got a lot of.
So classic Motown, gospel, pop.
R&B.
R&B.
And then also I was, I spent a little time in the Unification Church, which has its weird kind of like connection to John Denver, which was probably my first entrance into like traditional, you know, Caucasian folk music,
right?
For lack of a better phrase.
I think John Denver.
Did you grow any affinity for that, or is
I love Country Roads. Are you serious? Okay. And then it's weird being a
everyone loves that song.
Yeah.
Any other John Denver songs?
Well, that was like the only one we were supposed to sing.
Okay.
But I did see his like biography movie and had a little affinity towards his stories. Sad, tragic figures.
I mean, it's good storytelling. Really good storytelling.
Great story.
Great storytelling. More than just like, as much as I love Sierra, like Ride It is not the most. I mean, that's a great story too.
But Sierra's catalog is wide and vast too. Like she has a song like Promise, and Promise is one of the best written songs of that decade. Like, you know,
yeah,
that's and produced and performed. That song is amazing. God.
So going up, going to that high school, was that just like kind of like all the
middle school? Yeah,
I'm sorry,
it's okay.
Going to the middle school, was that all the kids like listened to? Was like that was like the predominantly on like the playlist or other?
I mean, like it was crazy. Like I remember the week where like. Get Rich or Die Trying came out. Yeah. It was like the month and like the Love Below came out and all that stuff and people having debates over what's the better like album and I was like always the guy who was like trying to put each record in their proper context.
It's like, listen, you know, I get like, what you're saying.
I mean, no, look, I was in Atlanta, so it was like predominantly, there was a lot of black folk, but there was like a lot of white kids who loved classic rock and I'd have to have full-on arguments about why like, you know, Jimmy Page's like pentatonic solos ain't really cutting it against like Carlos Santana or something like that. Like, you know what I mean? But like, this is sixth grade, you know?
Yeah, right.
And they don't really understand. I was like, no, but like, you have to understand where like, if Jimmy Page was sitting here right now, he would be like, he would be agreeing with me.
Yeah, he'd be like, he's right. He's right. Like,
you know?
Like note for note, he's right. Like, I can't argue with
him. Or like Guns N' Roses. I mean, but I love everything.
So when did you start getting into making your own music or how did that kind of come about?
You know, I was born in 92, so like all the kids know the day when they got a cell phone or got like internet access, you know, or like a Mac kind of access. So
sure.
I think around the time I got GarageBand at some point in middle school, it was like, oh, here are the Pharrell-esque tools for me to assemble these musical ideas that have always, you know, been around.
I think by that time, the idea of making your own music had become way more accessible than...
Absolutely.
Like we grew up, we were born in 82,
mm-hmm.
and the idea of like making a record or making music really until like Mac just became and GarageBand was like, oh, wait, you can actually make music unless you had a guitar or something like that.
Right.
So was your approach, like, did you just, like, play around with beats and loops and singing, or did you have, like, any musical training, or was it more, like, computer program first and then other stuff came in?
Well, all of my musical training was kind of steeped in like, tenor saxophone and symphonic marching band.
Oh, nice.
And I kind of, like, taught myself all the other instruments. But in terms of, like, music production, it was, like, I went straight to making beats and rapping. And, like, me and my brothers used to rap and stuff. And I would be the one who would cut up all the samples and, like, chop it up.
Favorite marching band song, though?
Oh, man. In marching band?
Yeah.
It's, like, it's a dead heat tie between, like, Earth, Wind, and Fire, In the Stone, and, like, Cameo, Talking Out the Side of Your Neck. It's like, you know, man, because those horn lines are just nasty.
Yeah. Can we get a song?
Yeah, sure.
What are you going to play for us first?
Fittingly, I'll play one of the first songs when I transitioned from rapping predominantly to singing songwriting.
What's it called?
It's called All My Lovers.
Okay, great. Live on Snacky Tunes. So what took you from Atlanta to New York?
I'm from D.C. and grew up in Maryland, and then we moved down to Atlanta about 5 years, and then we moved back to Maryland for high school. And I guess it's the, you know, the old school college situation. I had some irons in the fire, and one of them was SUNY Purchase acting conservatory.
How's your acting game?
It's good. I got a video dropping tomorrow. It's like a mini little short film. So
yeah?
There's a little bit of that.
What's the premise? What's the song?
It's the mood you guys played earlier. it's kind of like, I guess all the videos I do, they're trying to just deal with the influences and deal with how I've kind of, you know, there's a long story of like self-identity and trying to figure out who you are, especially as a black man and then a young black boy. Like, and so my influences, all the people have kind of like, in many ways, and everyone can relate to it, you figure out kind of what you want to do or what you can possibly do. You know, representation kind of matters. So the video is like a cauldron of all these different influences, like Michael Jackson Bad Video and all the other people I've played for and stuff like that.
I mean, you've played for some... You've got a nice list of rosters of collaborators.
Good people.
Yeah. 24, I would say.
3.
23. Oh.
That's all right.
No, it's okay.
And so, I mean, I know the Solange tour happened while you were in college, which we both saw you play. Mm-hmm. And then we saw the Bowery Ballroom show.
Yeah.
And a bunch of those. Yeah, and we've known Dev for a long time from the show and other stuff we've done with him. So
from a short-lived magic career.
Yeah.
He is awesome at sleight of hand magic.
Is he?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah. True story. True fact.
Now that you were kind of like, you know, playing like supporting roles and now you are really moving into your own kind of stuff, how has like the tables been turned where you supported them and then they're now supporting you? Or what advice have they given you as you start to branch out on your own career?
Yeah, I really wouldn't say it's like that yet. I mean, I'm just waiting until Solange drops her album. It's going to be phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm so super stoked to play and help her out in any way. It's been cool, I guess, because they all, our relationships kind of were founded off of like, we got to meet each other and they knew that I had these talents or things that I could do to help contribute. And part of like the audition processes were like, I played them some of my music. So they kind of know or knew. And I've been talking to Dev since I was 17 and sending him stuff. And it's like, we're all just kind of like friends and family, and they're just really supportive. They're like, yeah, right.
That's awesome. I mean, it's so nice. I think especially, I would say maybe with like the internet and social media and things like that, like mm-hmm. it's never been easier to be supportive or to like find collaborations. In the same way when you talk about just getting GarageBand, it's just like, all right, I really want to work with you. I'm going to track you down. I think that was
it's
your
tricky.
Story with,
yeah, it's, I mean, but it's tricky. It's tricky to say, because there's a fine line. Like I like to talk about it. Like my family, we're all from Mississippi and Native American, and there's a level of like intuition and primitive dreams and things like that. I don't want to get into so much, but I'll say this: I wouldn't have contacted any of those people if I didn't really deeply feel like I had a place with them or to help or
can you,
like.
Can you talk a little bit more about that?
So, for instance, like I mean, I'll do interviews and people be like, "Oh," or I'll play shows and people like, "You're just like blood orange and stuff." And sometimes it can really come off like, you know, divisive or something like that. But really, it's like, you know, Dev and I, we can just sit in a room and talk. Me and Adam, Kindness and Solange, we can talk about like Solange has a shelved country record that she made when she was younger than me. You know what I mean? Like, we all have the same kinds of influences and just cut from the same cloth in different corners of the table.
Is that country album all John Denver covers?
Not at all. I don't believe so at all. They're all original and like amazing.
Really?
Yes.
But I mean, I think like the concept of that is like, as you find your place in the world, it's like you find your people.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I only know from traveling and, you know, doing the work that I do, it's like you find people and you chat with them, but then like you'll sit down next to someone and have a conversation and 2 hours will go by when normally it's like 3 minutes and you're just like, how do I get out of this? And then you find those people and you never want to let them go like ever. Yeah. So it's like, and it's rad to find people that you can also work with and be creative with, and just you say like 4 words and they're like, yep,
right,
I totally get it.
Or the people that you can trust who are gonna edit you and say, no, that's not a good idea.
Oh, totally.
Which is rarer than the people who are just like, yeah, man, that's great. Oh, that's so great. And you're like, is it really great?
Is it really great?
Can we hear another song?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, did you have a thought?
Well, I was gonna say, you know, I never like plan, and even now, it's not like I have some kind of plan or anything like that. I'm only, you know, there's a great Blanche DuBois line where she's like, I've always
relied on the kindness
of strangers. And it's like, I wouldn't have been here if it weren't for my best friend Chester, who's Lord Raja on Ghostly, trying to like tell me like, hey man, like you can really rap and stuff, and like you should just rap over these beats. And then like that happened, and that was a mixtape. And then it was like, met some folk like James Blake, and these people were like, no, you should sing. And it's like, not that I haven't been doing these things since I was really young, but like, you know, you grow up in a family, in a community where you go to church and people are like singing to the hilt. And yeah. Those people aren't signed. Like, they go back, they go home and they raise their kids, and it's like really humbling to you. So I grew up being like, yeah, I could do all these things, but like, I'm only going to do the one I'm tried and tested in. And like,
right.
You know, so acting was that thing, but it's been nice with the support system to feel support.
It's good to have encouragement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the name of the next song?
Next song is Slammin' Mannequin.
Okay.
Awesome. Well, here we have Slammin' Mannequin live on Snacky Tunes.
Say a word to me, a word to me. The way you drift away, I swear you take the cake. Swear to God on earth that you're my fantasy, baby. And we don't have to talk at all. As long as I could look and see your face, you could be my slamming mannequin. Rock the greatest fashions and let it in. That you're not falling in love with me, in love with me. You could be my slamming mannequin, greatest fashions and let it in. Who's to say that you're not falling in love with me? Is it in my mind, or do you fit in my heart right there? From the window I see so clear your face, your hair. I can't get enough of you and what you do. Be my girl for a day or two now. When we speak, said no one knows. You strike a pose, you let it go. Whether I love you so, I've got to let you know that you could be my slamming mannequin girl. Rock the greatest fashions and let it in, baby. Who's to say that you're not falling in love with me, baby? You can be my slamming mannequin girl. Rock the greatest fashions and let it in, baby. Who's to say that you're not falling in love with me, baby? Oh, girl, you should know that I've got you on my mind. Secret admirer, yeah. Hell, I've been watching you, baby. Girl, you should know that I've got you on my mind. Secret admirer, baby. Hell, I've been watching you.
Nice little sample in there.
Alright.
Yeah, a little fun. So, yeah, you can go.
No, you go.
So, out video drops tomorrow. Yes. And what does the rest of your year look like? What would you like it to look like?
It might be premature to say. I might be doing, speaking of George, I might be doing this Purple Rain Meadowlands.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. That looks amazing. I mean, you did Sign of the Times in full, right, at Brooklyn Bowl?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how was that?
Well, that day, my dad was stuck in Peru and had to have emergency surgery.
Oh, no.
And then also, at the same time I found that out, I found out that we had been moved early in the slot because none other than Usher and the Roots were going to play right after us. And I was like, all right, cool.
Yeah, I mean, who's bumping us? Who's bumping? That's fine.
No, it wasn't even. That's funny. But it was just like, at that point, I was such in shell shock. I was like, all right.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Did you pull some middle school alum card with Usher?
Oh man, I didn't get to meet him.
Mm.
But I did have a private powwow with Questlove though, which was pretty.
He's awesome.
Yeah, especially when he's playing you all the most rare prints you could ever imagine, the stuff that people always thought was deleted, and that's all I'm gonna say on that.
Oh man. So you might play with George for the Meadows, which looks like, I mean, that Sunday lineup, I mean, the weekend looks good, but that Sunday lineup looks incredible.
Crazy.
Explain to the people what it is. It's the new Governor Ball Festival in October. And that Sunday, it's like George doing Purple Rain and Food, but also Chance and Kanye. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's more, but, you know, that's enough for a Sunday.
Bonkers.
Yeah. And then you are working on a new LP as well?
Sure am. Yeah. Okay. Working on a new LP. It's a lot of... Because Crucial, the last EP I put out, was kind of... The project of college and stuff, and so a lot of that was finished, and I've been writing the LP for some time now, and it's coming.
It's time to birth it.
It's time.
And then some upcoming shows in August as well, right?
Yes. August 10th at Come On Everybody, and I believe August 16th at the House of Yes.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we want to make sure we have time for one more song. Also, congrats on the New York Times.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, that was like really cool to see as well. And that's like, I mean, damn, dude, 23.
Hey.
Like, that's pretty rad. Good intuition.
We've always said that you've really made it as a New Yorker when you get your name in the New York Times.
Yeah.
Wow.
That also like gets everyone off your back for at least a couple years.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, it's good.
Like, all right, mom, dad. Cool. We're cool.
I know.
Cool.
I got the copies in my closet.
Did you send one to everyone, to your brothers, just to show them up? Hey, man, wasn't sure if you saw it. Wasn't sure. Hope you're doing well.
I definitely dropped the link in the group text.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
you can't sign a group text, though. So where can people find you, find your EP, find your tour dates, get a hold of you?
I think all the music's on Spotify and Tidal and what have you. And you can check the Facebook page. It's just .com/thisisstarchild. And also my Twitter is Black Till the Future. It's BLKTIL the future, like the film, but not the film. And then my Instagram is Bob McFerrin, like the man, but not the man.
Got it. And shout out to Sam from Ghostly.
Yeah,
shout out Amanda as well.
And Amanda Colvinson. And this next song is the first single on the next LP is dedicated to them.
I believe awesome. It said this is the first single off the new album.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, thanks to Wine Enthusiast Magazine. Darren, good to see you in studio.
It's so good. Shout out to the whole Heritage family, Dave, Patrick, Aaron.
Hi to Anna and Ornella.
Hi to Anna, Ornella. Shout out to Mom and Dad, to Meatball. And thank you for the Roberta's Pizza. Delicious. Yeah.
You went wild. All right. Star Child, take us out.
This song is called Hanging On.
Fell asleep. Sleep last night thinking about you. I saw you in my sleep, chased you till morning came. My mama said, follow your dreams. I guess you were my warning. Now I've let myself go. Hope you're still holding on. Fell
fell asleep last night drinking about you, baby. Boy, I'll be counting sheep until they run away. I thought you said I was your king, but you were never courting, baby. Now I've let myself go. Hope you're still holding on.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.